Listeners, we are actually starting this episode a little differently than we normally do since we taped this episode, which I believe was back in May, correct, Emily?
Yes, it was May of 2023.
Since then, we have lost one of our very esteemed members of the FTT alum, Alan Arkin.
Yes.
And we wanted to take a few minutes. I don't think it can go without saying and giving some respect to this great actor that we lost and that we really miss.
Indeed. He, of course, played Sir Beau in the episode that we're going to be reviewing tonight. And he was an Academy Award winner. He was, I believe, a Tony Award winner and nominated for several Emmys and just a very gifted performer. And we wanted to just take a second and pay tribute to him. So, Eric, what are your memories of Alan Arkin?
I would say that I really saw him again in something, not until I got a little bit older, which was Little Miss Sunshine. I
Oh,
was
yes.
just fresh out of high school. I remember when that came out, 2006, and that was the role that he finally won his Oscar for. And he played that really disgruntled, really funny, curmudgeon-y grandfather in that movie. And I just loved his role in that. And I was automatically like, oh my God, that's Beau from The Emperor's New Clothes. And then, of course, later, his later project, The Kominsky Method, that he did with Michael Douglas. I loved him in that. So he
Oh.
did a great job in that.
I was more familiar with his early work. I think it's mentioned in our episode, but my favorite role of his was in Wait Until Dark with Audrey Hepburn, where he played the villain. And it took me several years to realize that that was Sir Beau, because Sir Beau is not supposed to be a villain. It messed with my head a little bit, but he was truly a very, very gifted entertainer. And we were truly sorry to hear about his passing this past June.
Yes, and we will really miss him. And Emily and I did actually see a film of his together. We saw him in the live action remake of Dumbo.
Yes, we did. And we both really enjoyed that.
So it's good to see that his performances will live on. And we just figured we'd pay tribute because we do mention him quite a bit in this episode. Obviously, he's one of the main leads in this episode. And we definitely had to pay tribute to this great actor that has recently passed. And without further ado,
The Emperor's New Clothes. Welcome to tonight's tale, a fairy tale theater podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Emily from Atlanta, Georgia, and I am joined by Eric.
My name is Eric. I'm from New York.
And we are going through every episode in alphabetical order. Tonight's tale, we are going through The Emperor's New Clothes.
Episode 22, Season 4, Episode 7, and it aired on October 5th, 1985.
What is the first thing that springs to mind when you think about this episode, Eric?
What stands out always for me is Art Carney and Alan Arkin, because I was always a big fan of theirs growing up. Well,
Really?
not growing up, but as I got older. And I think now that I'm older, I think I appreciate that they were in this episode a lot more because, of course, Art Carney, we don't have anymore, RIP. And they were probably the shining point of the episode, having their comedic duo at the forefront, I think.
I will agree, but I will also add to that list the great Dick Shawn, who we also don't have anymore. Rest in peace. He was a great comedian. Of course, he plays the Emperor. I was not familiar with his work as a kid, but like you said, as I got older, I really had more of an appreciation of who he was. I agree with you. The first thing that comes to my mind is the cast. Art Carney. I remember the Honeymooners. Alan Arkin, great film career. Dick Shawn. And we've got, I remembered this right off the top of my head. We've got James Bond himself doing the narration. We've got Timothy Dalton.
Yeah, so cool. And I do agree with you, Dick Shawn. He just hams it up. He's awesome in this. He really is. And that's probably where I was introduced. I mean, with most things with fairy tale theater, I was introduced to most people when I was watching this at a very, very young age. I probably started watching fairy tale theater when I was like 4 or 5. So
same, if not younger.
So that's where I implanted those images and ideas of people that I would come to later see in movies. And I'd be like, oh yeah, that's so-and-so. That's the emperor. That's
exactly, you know. Exactly. I'm the same way. I grew up going, Dick Shun. Oh, he's funny. Oh, he was the emperor. Alan Arkin. Oh, he was spooky and Wait Until Dark. Now, why do I know him? Oh, that's right. He was Sir Bob. That's the way we grew up. We knew them in fairy tale theater first. The other thing that really comes to mind quickly when I think about this episode is, of course, the original fairy tale, one of Hans Christian Andersen's most famous tales. And it's actually, it's a pretty short one. I read it myself when I was a kid. I haven't reread it recently, but I believe you have.
Yes, I have. I wouldn't so much call it a fairy tale. I would more call it a parable of sorts.
Oh, that's perfect.
It's very small. It's very short. And it delivers a message.
It's kind of entered our lexicon now where people say the emperor has new clothes. Parable is more appropriate than fairy tale. I completely agree with you.
I agree. It's not really like Hans Christian Andersen's. It's not like his other stories because there's no fantastical elements to it. Pretty much takes place in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no magic really to speak of. And it's very different than the other stories. There's no romance, although I'm familiar with the Canon Movie Tale version where they tried to insert a romance in there just to have one.
Awkwardly.
Very, very weird and awkward. But yeah. No, this, and the fairy tale theater version did, comparing to the story, they followed the story pretty closely. There's some embellishments that we'll discuss later on, but you needed to embellish a little bit. You needed to stretch it to a 50-minute show. You know, you couldn't just have a 30-minute show. You needed to stretch it to almost an hour, and that's what they needed to do. They needed to add some embellishments and some flourishments. And I think the changes they made to it actually didn't seem like add-ons. They actually worked. It wasn't like we're just throwing stuff in here and, like I said, kind of moving tales, making a, you know, a relationship out of nowhere, a romance. It wasn't anything of that sort. It worked. It seemed to be, it didn't seem forced. It didn't seem superficial. It seemed authentic to the story. It didn't seem like it was trying too hard to stretch it out and make it a long story, which I've seen with other stories.
Oh, definitely. And I think Shelley probably ran into some trouble with this, especially with, I'm half Danish. I'm, of course, very loyal to Hans Christian Andersen. My father was born in the same town as him, randomly. But some of his stories, like The Snow Queen, could go on. Calling The Snow Queen a fairy tale is kind of absurd to me. That's a short novel. And then Princess and the Pea is like a page. His stories could go in either direction, but in this was the 1980s Showtime, everything had to be condensed to a 50-minute show. So sometimes they had to really stretch to add, and sometimes they had to cut a lot. We start with our beautiful Shelley doing her introduction.
Hello, I'm Shelley Duvall. Welcome to Fairy Tale Theater. We all enjoy dressing up, but tonight's tale is about a man whose passion for apparel becomes an obsession, and how he learns a lesson in humility at the hands of two scroungy schemers, the Emperor's new clothes.
And this is where we see that they are setting the costumes and sets based on the court of, I think it's Louis XV of France. So in the 1700s, which I think was a beautiful artistic direction. It worked for me. How'd you feel about it?
It was very much giving me like that type of vibe, Paris of Versailles, Marie Antoinette. And I think it was a very smart choice because you're making a point and a critique of monarchy and their rule over society and how they really don't care about their people and they care about the pomp and circumstance and the fashion and the riches and their beautiful life, which was very much what happened with Marie Antoinette and King Louis. And They just weren't aware that people were starving and they couldn't pay their bills and they couldn't pay their taxes and they couldn't buy their family's food. And
so
this
let them eat cake.
And so let them eat cake. And it's very, I think whoever made that decision to draw that comparison, because the very clear comparison to France during that time was very smart, because this story was Hans Christian Andersen. He was not French.
Patron saint of Denmark, thank you.
Right. So, but I guess they were making a good point of things that people would be very familiar with that could link to this theme and what was happening in this story. And I think it was kind of smart to kind of make that nod in comparison to those two things.
I completely agree. I don't think I'd quite expanded on it as much as you just did so elegantly. But yes, this did happen in history, where a king was so out of touch with his peasants and his people that he didn't really care what he spent as long as he looked good. The other monarch that I was thinking of when I rewatched this was actually, we call him now Mad King Ludwig of Bavaria. He basically did the same thing. He bankrupted his subjects to pay for his castles. He wasn't a clothes horse. He just liked to build pretty castles, but that's why he's called Mad King Ludwig. I digress.
Very, very interesting. Very interesting. I also looked up kind of the backstory of Emperor's New Clothes, and it's actually based on a 1335 story from the Libro de los Ejemplos, which is a medieval Spanish collection of 51 cautionary tales with various sources such as Aesop. And Andersen did not know the Spanish original, but read the tale in a German translation. So he actually did research into this and created his own version, which is actually very interesting. So it's a very, very, very old tale. It even goes back further than Andersen.
I never knew that. Yeah. I have no trouble believing it. Like, I think we talked couple weeks ago when we did Cinderella, that one goes back further than any of us could even imagine. So Emperor's New Clothes, like you said, it's more of a parable. That makes perfect sense to me. It's a cautionary.
Yeah, a cautionary tale, yes.
So we have our introduction from Shelley, and then we
Which I love. I love the introduction.
Oh, beautiful here. I think this is one of the times she looked most beautiful. She's in that gorgeous yellow dress. And she just looks like she's having a great time sitting there.
And she puts the fake beauty mark on her face.
I love it. I do. I so identified with her. She's probably going in, I get to sit in a pretty dress. And good for you, Shelley. Then we get our opening credits and we get the harpsichord music, which of course puts us in the same time frame. I was just reading through the supporting cast and I'd forgotten how many actually big names were in this, or at least famous character actors. We had the lovely Georgia Brown, great stage actress. You and I are both big Broadway fans, so we know she was the original Nancy in Oliver. Barry Ingham played the Minister of Finance. My generation, Eric, I'm not sure if you remember this, but my generation, we definitely remember Barry Ingham because he was Basil of Baker Street in The Great Mouse Detective.
Yep. I used to love that movie. Oh my God.
Yeah, so 80s Disney. This was pre-Renaissance Disney. And then Clive Revel is the Prime Minister, a role which he actually played again. He played the exact same character in Canon Movie Tales.
Which is so interesting, isn't that?
It's such a Clive Revel thing to do. I think he must be a big fairy tale fan at heart because he did a bunch. He did fairy tale theater. He did Canon. I think he was in three of the Canon Movie Tales. He was in Emperor's New Clothes. He was in Rumpelstiltskin and he was in Frog Prince. So He must be a big fairy tale fan. More power to him.
Yeah, and it looks like he's been in many different adaptations over the years.
Yeah, he's a Kiwi. Good New Zealander. Still with us, thankfully. We get Timothy Dalton's narration and our introduction to Dick Shawn as our emperor. We get a cute introduction to the emperor and his court, and he's talking about his newest outfit and asking which of his clothes is more beautiful. I love this scene. I thought it set the tone perfectly.
Yeah, I love it. He's just so smug. He's so haughty. He's so into himself. And it's so campy and over the top. And it's great.
It is. I really enjoyed Dick Shawn's performance on this rewatch. He's hamming it up. He's having a ball, and it works. I just got the impression he's like, and they're paying me to do this?
Right.
And he dismisses the court, and he's talking to himself in the mirror.
And what a reflection I see. An emperor. Not just an ordinary emperor, but a truly magnificently wonderful emperor whom I truly adore.
And actually kisses himself in the mirror, which I don't know if that was his choice or the director's, or maybe even the screenwriter's. It was perfect. That moment said it all. He finds it just irresistible.
That's the shot they always show too in the trailers. They always show him kissing his reflection.
Because it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. Who could adore himself more than kissing yourself in the mirror? I loved that shot. Summed up his character in one movement. Our next scene, we have our introduction to our two heroes, or anti-heroes, I guess you could say, Bo and Morty, played by Art Carney and Alan Arkin.
The con men.
The con men. They're con men, but we're kind of rooting for them the whole time. They're likable con men.
Yeah. So, Bo and Morty.
When we meet them, they are on the run from swindling a previous village. Apparently, their takings were very small. And Morty's getting a little older, and he's talking about going straight, which Bo is dead set against. He had a good line. Morty, you're too good to be honest.
And they're talking about ideas for their next best thing. And for some reason, they came up with a scheme about ducks.
I love you catch this? I love the ducks. That's like my favorite thing of Morty.
A duck farm. Of course, it won't be a big duck farm because we haven't got that kind of capital right away. But later on, I'll expand.
A duck farm.
Duck farm. Raise ducks. How hard can it be? Simple. You walk around, you feed the ducks. Quack, quack. They have babies. The babies grow up. You feed them. Then you pluck the ducks and you sell it down to people that make pillows. Then, of course, you got eggs. You can eat the eggs if you want. Or you can sell them to people that eat eggs, too. Make a little profit there. You can eat the whole darn duck if you want.
I don't know nothing about ducks.
I don't either. I'm just making a conversation.
And
it doesn't really sound like a scheme. It just sounds like going to be duck farmer.
Well, no, that's what Morty was saying. He wants to go straight because he's too tired of scheming. He just wants to go straight and open a duck farm.
So funny.
You get the feeling these guys aren't really wanting to go straight. They're just bored.
So good. So funny. I do have to say this whole episode moves along very fast.
It does. A lot of quick scenes.
Yeah.
It was a little hard to keep up with in my notes because we go straight from maybe we'll be duck farmers to back at the palace, and we see our beautiful Clive Revel as the prime minister, and they're trying to plan the emperor's next fashion show. I love the idea that the prime minister's main job is planning the emperor's fashion show. I love that.
And he's trying on this outfit, and he's like pink shell and gold leaf, and he's got like this ridiculous red hat on. And I just wrote, I really love these costumes, so good. Because I really did. I feel like they spent a lot of money
and they
on
are
the budget beautiful. For costumes in this episode.
They are beautiful, and I don't think they were ever reused. I mean, maybe some of the villagers' costumes might have been reused, but this was very much where the budget went. It went into the fashion, and right decision. I applaud them on that. It was worth it. Dick Shawn's wardrobe alone was amazing, but also, I mean, the courtiers all had great dresses and costumes and wigs. They pulled out all the stops.
Oh, yeah, I loved it.
Oh, and the emperor has a cute little moment where he really could care less what's going on in his kingdom, or I guess empire if he's an emperor. He's more concerned with where he should put the beauty mark. Should it go on his cheek? Should it go on his chin? And then he starts to play with putting it at the tip of his nose.
And if you watch the beauty marks during the episode, this is a fun fact. If you watch the beauty marks on the emperor, they always move. and then they multiply. Like by the end, he has three on his face.
That's true. I think subconsciously I picked up on that. I hadn't quite consciously picked up on that. You're right. Yeah,
so funny.
Oh, they were going for it.
The next scene we go back. That's what you're talking about. It's just very quick moving back and forth.
Yes.
That was just not fun for me taking notes because I was just trying to write really fast.
No problem. I kept having to pause. Wait, oh, we're here. No, we're there. No, we're back.
And Morty and Bo arrive in the town, and it's a really funny moment because he's like, well, there's no one here. Where is everyone? Yeah, so in that moment, he's like, where is everyone? And then we meet, of course, the beautiful Georgia Brown playing Maggie, the bar wench.
She's wonderful. And don't tell me she wasn't channeling Nancy from Oliver when she was doing this.
I was getting ready for her to break out into Number.
Yeah.
I'd do anything.
Oompa, oompa.
She buried that accent too.
Oh yeah, she was. She was doing the old English Cockney. Oh, we miss Georgia Brown. The Trekkie in me has to go. That's Worf's mother.
And from Cheers also.
She was on Cheers.
Yeah. Bar wench, Cheers. Boop, boop.
I love it. So anyway, Maggie, I keep.
She also died very young. She died like 58 years old.
That is very young.
Yeah.
Cancer, I think.
Unfortunately, a lot of this cast on this episode died very, didn't die. There are, most of them are gone.
A lot of them
died very young.
I noticed that too. Actually, I was thinking of it. I believe Alan Arkin and Clive Rebel might be the only ones we have left.
Yep.
I was looking up the actor who played the soldier, and he died young of cancer, too. Very sad. So anyways, we meet Maggie, Georgia Brown, and she explains that they have to go to the fashion show. The Emperor's having a fashion show, and they all need to go, or they'll be thrown in the dungeon. So Bo and Morty, being reasonable people, go, all right, we'll go to the fashion show. So we see the fashion show where Dick Shawn is just hamming it up on the runway. I think these moves had to be choreographed by a professional dancer. They were wonderful. This is one time where I wish we weren't just a podcast. I wish our listeners could see some of these movements that he was putting in. He's just moving around like a ballerina. It's perfect.
And that yellow outfit, I really like it.
Yeah, we get Clive Revel reading a detailed description of each outfit. I nearly cried. It was so funny.
And of course, the royal blue sash. For those times when your trousers are begging, don't let me down. Notice the sleeves, stylish, yet able to easily hug and caress your arms. The velvet waistcoat with chrysanthemum floral design is a must for any fashionable man about town.
Total commitment from both of them. Bo and Morty start talking to Maggie about the fashion show, and she explains that, well, it's really all the Emperor cares about is his clothes and his fashion shows, and the rest of us can just rot. As the show continues, Bo says he's starting to get an idea. So we get the grand finale of the fashion show, where the Emperor is smelling flowers and practicing for a picnic. The rest of this town is all in squalor. It looks so run down, but except for the red velvet carpet and the Emperor prancing around preparing for a picnic, it was hysterical. I think it really drove the point how out of touch the Emperor was. You do get a full view of the crowd. I have a question. If the entire town is required to be at that fashion show, why were there only about 8 people there?
It's a very small town, Emily.
Well, it's either a really small town or the rest were probably just going, I prefer to be in prison. Honestly, that's what I thought. I'm like, are the rest in jail or just preferring it at this point? I get the feeling the town is over it.
I would be over it.
I would too. And apparently he does it every Friday. Oof. I probably would be going, come get me.
But Maggie sets it up. She goes, clothes, clothes, clothes. That's all he's obsessed with. And she sets it pretty much up for them. And they're like, I have an idea.
Yep. You can see the wheels start to turn.
And, oh, prior to that, I really like the little back and forth between Bo and Morty. And he's like, Bo's like, are you thirsty? And then Morty's like, can't tell. My mouth is always dry.
Well, that's once they leave the fashion show.
Yeah, that was before they came up with their scheme. That was like right before they came up with their scheme. And it's cute little moment, little comedic moment. And then he comes with his idea. That's what we're going to do. We're going to scheme the Emperor. And Morty's like, are you crazy?
Yeah,
he's thinks- you have your head bobbing down the street.
He's like, out of everyone you want to scam, you're picking an emperor? Maybe pick someone a little lower down on the totem pole? And Bo's going, no, he's the perfect guy. You think about it, we don't know at the time, but Morty's thinking, the guy's an emperor. He probably has an army. We find out, yeah, he does, but it's one guy.
The army of one. And yeah, so that's their whole scheme.
And yeah, it took some arm twisting on Bo's part. Morty wasn't 100% on board. But what happens then is, as they're discussing it, the townspeople arrive back from the fashion show. And they're complaining about how they had to pay for everything they just saw. I did recognize one of the actors that came in playing one of the townspeople. Very tall man, and he was sitting on. I recognized him right away. I checked. I was right. It's Lyman Ward, otherwise known to us 80s kids as Ferris Bueller's dad.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
That was Ferris Bueller's dad. I recognized him right away.
That's hysterical.
You see him again. Yeah. He's in a couple scenes. He's the one holding the kid up at the very end. So this was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's your 80s trivia for you.
Good eye, Emily.
So Bo starts off with his scam right away. He starts claiming he and Morty are tailors and they found the Emperor's show very boring. And I don't blame the townspeople for getting a little defensive at that, seeing how they paid for everything. You found the show boring? Well, yeah, we're these great tailors. Okay, then Maggie and the townspeople ask a very reasonable question. If you're such famous tailors, why are you dressed like bums?
Which is a fair question.
It is. And they come up with a rather thin story of
someone took all our money and our clothes.
We were robbed, but we're good. We're good. And Georgia Brown's like, uh-huh. All right. Have another one, boys. She's very much the bar wench, seen it all, heard it all, whatever you say, boys. Good for her. We are back at the palace, and the emperor asks for a report from the Minister of Finance. There's our adorable Barry Ingham, Basil of Baker Street right there. I'm an accountant in real life. I really feel for the Minister of Finance. He's actually trying to deliver serious financial reports. And the emperor couldn't care less. He does not care what's going on with his spending. He wants to raise his budget for his, what was it, cummerbunds?
Yeah, and he's like, so you're sure you want to decrease defense and security for more clothes? And he's like, yep.
Yep, that's the plan. And then I love it because he's really dedicated to this train of thought. There is a sort of logic here, a warped one, but a sort of logic.
But if I may point out that if we increase the amount for the C&Cs, we shall have to decrease the amount allocated for defense and security, which is very important.
Yes, but not nearly as important as the appearance of the Emperor, which is me. The people care not one whit for the inner workings of government. They only care that I look the part. If I were to appear as a slovenly, disheveled ragamuffin, the subjects would assume that I am as common as ordinary as they are, and unfit to rule this vast kingdom. No, they want to look up to me. They need to admire me. They demand I impress them. And I shall.
Because no one would ever attack me if I look so great. Okay.
Okay. I mean, in his mind, it makes sense. And he's going, but sir, like, it doesn't make sense because you already have barely any army.
I mean, it's true. No one's tried that strategy before.
So, and then we meet the army.
This, I love the army.
I'm the Emperor's fighting man. Protect his honor when I can. Count off. One.
I love this guy. I had to look his name up.
Taylor Negron.
Bravo. Yes.
And he also died very young. He died at 57 years old. And I knew he looked familiar. He was in Angels in the Outfield, which was a big movie in the 90s.
Oh, I remember.
And also Biodome.
Yeah. And he was, I wrote down, he stole every scene he was in. I love this guy. He plays the army. Yes, one person plays the entire army because, as we realized, the emperor has spent so much, they only have money for one soldier in one uniform.
Because he spent so much money on the uniform. It's such a over-the-top uniform with gold plating and feathers, and that they can only afford to dress one member of the army, and it's just one.
Good. I told my sister I was doing a rewatch of Emperor's New Clothes, and she quoted this line. She's going, first thing I think of, she goes, we might have the smallest army in the land, but by God, it's the best dressed.
They also use that in the trailer also.
It is a wonderful line. It's perfectly delivered. I love that line. I might have put that one on my old website. I remember it always being a favorite line of mine. And, oh, God bless that actor playing the army. He's devoted. He's singing. He does the drill march all by himself. Count off one.
That's hysterical.
It takes a lot to steal a scene with such comic legends, but I think he did. I just loved him so much in this. After he leaves, the prime minister informs the emperor that there's word in town. There's some new tailors that have arrived, and he tries to laugh it off. He's like, yeah, they say they're tailors, but you know. And that doesn't work at all. He said the magic word to the emperor, and the emperor is like a dog with a bone. Tailors? Tailors? Where are they? Scour the lands. Find them. So that really
backfired. So funny. And then I love when the army, we're just calling him the army because that's what he is. He's the army.
I know. But I'm like, no, he's the army. That one guy is the entire army. So good for him. But the end of that scene, I'm sorry, but as some of you know, I am a very proud Michigan State alumni. And the last line the emperor has in that scene is, blue and gold is so passe. As a proud Michigan State Spartan, our rival is U of M. Those are their colors. I love that line.
Oh my God, that's funny.
So Bo and Morty are in town. Morty finds an apothecary because of his constant upset stomach gag. All right, we need to talk about this upset stomach gag. I didn't find it funny. I kind of felt for Art Carney there. He has to say twice, don't shoot, I got a bad stomach, which I'm like, that's not funny. And it doesn't even really make sense.
Right.
And he has to do it at least twice. Morty's got a bad stomach. I don't know. It didn't work for me. But while Morty is treating this bad stomach, the army finds Bo and he says,
state your name and your business.
My name is Rambo Lorenzo Wagner. My occupation, custom tailor extraordinary.
And you have a partner who's also a tailor?
As a matter of fact, I do, yes. He is inside there at the moment.
Thank God I have finally found you. I've been searching every nook and every cranny in this entire kingdom looking for you both. I am the personal army for His Royal Highness, the Emperor of all the land.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. The Emperor hereby requests that you and your partner appear before him immediately or sooner, if possible.
Every line he delivers, he just is 110% committed. God bless him. And then Morty comes back from the apothecary, and this was the first real laugh I got from Art Carney, because he does the mother of all belches.
Oh yeah, that was a cute moment. I like that.
We are back at the palace, and the army introduces Rambo Lorenzo Wagner and Morton Woodrow Clayton. I love their names. I love their names. Rambo? Really?
Rambo. And he goes, you can just call us Bo and Morty, sire. And he's like, I love when Dick Shawn's like, Bo and Morty. Like, it's like so like.
He loves their so names. Fun. He loves their names.
And he's just laughing. He's like, oh, that's so amusing.
Now, the Emperor asks why he's never heard of them, because he does keep up in the fashion world. Again, fair question. And they claim it's because they work under assumed names, which does not make any sense at all to me. Does that make sense? I mean, I get why an author would use a pen name. I guess that's kind of what they're going for. Like, I don't know. It struck me as a very thin excuse, but at least they asked the question. They claim that they can weave an amazing cloth that appears invisible to anyone who is unfit for office or incredibly stupid. I don't know about you, but that doesn't really sound that amazing. Well, it sounds kind of interesting, but it sure doesn't sound like something I'd want to wear.
Yeah, I don't.
Oh, stupid people will see me naked? That doesn't sound good.
Yeah, I didn't ever quite get that. It's very interesting, but...
Well, if you take it down to its very basic, it's, you know, you can't find gullible in the dictionary. It's basically the exact same thing.
Yeah, it's basically the same in the story as well. That's exactly what they describe. That's how the clothes are going to be. They're going to be anyone who is unfit for office or unquestionably stupid. And that's what goes on with the cloth.
So I should check in with you. How have we been with following the story thus far?
The story doesn't have much to it. It's very similar, like you said, to Princess and the Pea, that it just starts right away. Like, here's, we have an emperor who loves his clothes. We have these two swindlers that come to town. They go and meet the emperor, and they, like, there's not really all this exposition that we have with the army and all of that. It's all added on for fairy tale theater to flesh out the story a little more. But
so no duck farm.
No duck farm, no. And there's not really any banter, really, either. I mean, there's not really names for the swindlers either. You know, it's just very straightforward. And it moves along very, very, very fast. I mean, it took me 10 minutes to read the whole story. So
wow,
it's very fast. It's very quick.
But I think I get what you were saying earlier, where the stuff they added made perfect sense. The army of one. I love it. That's brilliant. It totally fits the story. And yeah, I get that it wasn't in the original tale, but that's an expansion that seems very true to the spirit. I like that.
It's funny and it's fun.
The emperor, of course, eats this up with a spoon. He's so excited about this new cloth. I wrote down, I'm like, is he having a seizure? He's shaking and dancing. Dick Shawn was very, very physical in this role. I can't describe it other than I think he must have worked with a professional dancer to choreograph some of these moves. He's just wonderful.
It's great.
So Bo,
and he puts them right to work, right? From there, he's like, let's go. Make me these clothes.
Yeah. And he puts them in a room in the palace. They're doing pretty good for themselves, considering that they just were run out of the last town and now they've got a room in a palace. And they reason that they should at least pretend to be looming in case someone should be watching from a window. Morty tries and immediately breaks the loom. Cute moment where someone off camera was clearly throwing odd pieces at Art Carney. There's no way he broke the loom that much, but people were just chucking things. I guess I understand the reason to fake looming in case someone should look through a window, but when you see where the window is later, it's nowhere near the looms. They probably just could have gone to bed.
But they need to have looms. Like, how are those making the fabric?
Oh, they need to have them, but do they need to actually sit at the looms and pretend to?
Probably not, but they probably were the maybe whole reason they wanted probably to behind make it. Yeah, and maybe in case someone walked in or if someone was spying on them.
All right. Maybe I have a more trusting nature. Everyone in that palace seemed to be pretty naive, but I'll give you that one. Oh,
they're professional con men, Emily. They know what they're doing.
That's, you know what? Fair point.
Don't doubt Morty and Bo.
They know what they're doing. The Emperor doesn't, but they do. I mean, they're clearly the smartest ones. Arguably, Maggie might be smarter.
Then I love that Clive Revel, he's the first person to go and inspect the cloth.
Yes. At first, we see the Emperor having a dilemma because he really wants to see the cloth, but he wants to be patient. Clive Revel innocently arrives, and there's just a cute exchange.
You think I'm vain? Not in the least, my lord.
One has to love oneself in order to love others. And no one loves me like I do. Now, what do you want?
You called me, sire.
Of course I did. I want you to check on the fabric. I would do it myself, but I can't decide what to wear. And I've chosen you, my trusted minister, because I don't want to send some idiot who's not going to be able to see it.
I'm almost thrilled, my lord.
And the prime minister lies through his teeth, as any good politician would. So he sends the prime minister in to check on the fabric for him, which he does. So we get the scene where Clive Revel is inspecting the fabric. And I actually really liked how they did this. You see the prime minister, and he clearly doesn't see anything, but you get the voiceover, his inner monologue.
My dear God, I cannot see a thing. Am I unfit for office? No. I must be stupid. Well, if I am, I don't want anybody to know.
Beautiful, simply gorgeous. Notice the swirling of the peacock feathers, the colors dancing before your very eyes.
Ah, yes. What dancing patterns.
Would you like to touch it, sir?
Oh, soft.
Now tell me, sir, is that a cloth or is that a cloth?
Amazing. I cannot believe my eyes. I shall report to His Majesty that the cloth is indeed.
I see nothing.
Yeah, I kind of
am I stupid?
I love how they did the voiceover work. At the end of the day, this was a children's show. Most of us cynical adults go, well, of course he's going to lie. But I remember watching this when I was like 5, and I'm going, oh, that's why he lied. So I thought that was very nice how they kind of explained it to the kids a little bit.
Yeah, and this happens in the story too, this exact inner monologue. This is the only real dialogue in the story, that when they have
really?
Frogs, yeah. When the prime minister, and they do it in that order, the prime minister goes to see first, and he's having his inner monologue about the cloth.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Did not
it's
remember.
Almost identical. It's almost identical to the original story.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get Morty going back to the tavern, and actually a really great scene between Georgia Brown and Art Carney. She explains that it's not the Emperor who's paying, it's the people. And if the Emperor raises the taxes again, she's probably going to lose her tavern. And Art Carney's kind of going, wait, we didn't quite factor this in. They thought they were just taking advantage of the Emperor. He didn't quite realize that taking advantage of the Emperor meant taking advantage of the people. So you can see he's visibly disturbed by that. That really bothers him. And I thought that was just, it was a very short, but I thought very sweet moment between them. And
well, then she kicks him out.
She kicks him out because, and rightfully so, in my opinion, he hadn't realized what he was doing was actually hurting innocent people. He thought he was taking advantage of a vain peacock, but I don't know. I just kind of really liked it. Showed some real humanity on Morty's part. Sweet, short, but very well acted by both.
And this whole side story, that all of this doesn't exist in the story, but it fleshes it out and it gives more meaning to the story, to the fairy tale, I think.
I think so too. And it makes perfect sense. Like Morty's going, wait, I didn't think the townspeople would resent us. Oh, of course we do. I'm with Maggie on this. She's absolutely right. You're taking advantage of our leaders who can tax us. You're taking advantage of us indirectly. And remember, he tries to tell her, we've got this little scheme worked out. And she goes, get out. Just get out. Good for her. But he heard her. He heard her because in the next scene, he goes back to talk to Bo. And he actually says, you know what? Let's take the Emperor for everything he's worth. The guy deserves it. At first, you're kind of going, Morty, what? You just heard what Maggie had to say. And now you're saying take more. And then you realize it's because he's got a plan to give some of it back. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, he's still a con man. He'll certainly take his cut, but he plans to take everything and give a good portion of it back to the people. So
he's a thoughtful con man.
He is. He's a con man with a heart.
He wants to have a Robin Hood moment.
Yeah, essentially. Next, we have the Emperor going down the corridor, which appears to be a leftover set from Dancing Princesses. Did you notice that?
Yes. Yes, very much so.
And
the doors and the drapes and all of that.
And the curved hallway. I'm pretty sure we see the same one again in Princess and the Pea. I'm pretty sure it's the same set. They just changed mm-hmm. the color of the drapes.
Exactly. And he's trying to spy and he's trying to be all nonchalant about it. And it's so funny that when the finance minister comes walking down the hallway, He just tries to hide in the corner, put his face right in the corner and like try to disappear.
If I can't, like, if I can't see him, he can't see me, right?
Right. Just stay perfectly still.
My 7-year-old niece tries that. It doesn't work for her either.
And he's like, sire? Oh, me? Oh.
Well, you see, I
was going to inspect the cloth. Just as I was about to knock, I realized I'd had a manicure, and I didn't want to scratch my nails. Oh. So you can knock and look for me. Ah.
I love this Emperor. His excuses are so much more princessy than anything I could ever come up with. And I can be very princessy in my excuses.
He's definitely not high maintenance at all, Dick Shawn.
Oh, I love it. Anyways, he does order the Minister of Finance to inspect the cloth, and Barry Ingham's game, he goes in. Basically, the same thing happens as with the Prime Minister.
And they call him the Chancellor in the story. That's the same thing as a finance minister, right? Pretty much?
Can be.
I guess.
Sure.
So, yeah, there's that. That's the second person in the story to inspect as well.
Step right up this way and feast your eyes on it. Oh! Wonderful.
No, it's a bit to the left, my dear sir.
Oh. There we go.
Oh.
I can't see a bloody thing. Can I? Yes.
No.
Maybe.
Nothing.
They're having the same inner monologue with their, and I love the facial expressions that they're making, like smiling, then frowning, then confused.
Oh, Barry's facial expressions were wonderful. He's like, I think I see something. Yes. No. Maybe. No.
It's very funny.
I miss you, Barry. Minister reports back to the Emperor, of course, that it's amazing. And the Emperor goes, all right, that's it. I've heard from my two highest ministers that it's perfect. I'm going to organize a procession. And he goes off to plan it. And then there's a very cute little moment between the two ministers where they sort of compare notes.
What did you think of the plot? I agree with what you said. It was incomparable.
What did you think of the green trim?
The green trim?
You didn't see the green trim?
I was thinking of the swan design.
Oh, Delicate swans.
I mean peacock.
Of course, peacocks.
It's so easy to confuse a peacock with a swan.
Quite.
And they're both kind of going, I didn't see anything. Did he see something? I don't think he saw something. I don't know. But if he saw something and I didn't, or I saw, you know what? Let's just keep moving along. I just love that little scene. And it only lasted for like 20 seconds, but.
It's a very cute scene.
Very and true to politicians. The politicians never want to tip their hand. They want to know what the other one knows.
Very true.
Next, we get our beautiful army again. Be there or be dead. No pressure there.
Yeah, no pressure. Just you better show up or else. And then I think in the next scene, it cuts to after the ceremony when they're walking in with all their money and stuff that they got from the emperor.
Oh.
It doesn't really show the ceremony. It just shows them leaving the ceremony and going back to their room.
So right after the proclamation, it cuts to them and they're counting their money and Morty suggests giving some of the money back to the people. And they're interrupted in that discussion by the emperor himself. And that's when he announces that he's going to give them both knighthoods.
Well, yeah, before all that, Morty tells Bo, he tells him, he's like, you know, we should just go. Like, we have money. We should just take our money and go.
Yeah.
Right before the emperor walks in. And they were kind of like contemplating that. So he's like, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe we should just go.
And we're leaving out an important part. The emperor inspects the cloth at that point.
Yes. And the emperor walks in, is now inspecting the cloth.
And of course, he plays.
I love this scene because he's like, no, don't touch it. You can touch it with your cheek. And he's like, ooh, it's so soft.
Gives me goosebumps.
Oh my goodness. And he's like, what do you think of it? He's like, it's like nothing I've ever seen before.
Well, he was telling the truth.
And it's the same thing. He has a whole inner monologue, like the prime minister and the finance minister. And it's very funny. It's a very, very funny moment. And then, like you said, he bestows the titles, Sir Bo and Sir Morny. He says, that's what's going to happen. I'm going to bestow those titles on you. And yeah, it's a very funny moment.
He takes it and one ups it. He's like, not only am I pleased, I'm going to give you both knighthoods. Dang.
It's pretty serious.
That is pretty serious. Then we cut to them returning from their presumably knighthood party. And that's when they consider making a fast exit. Okay, we got our money. We got our knighthoods. Let's go. Let's go. And they discover that the soldier is posted right outside to make sure they're not disturbed. So there goes that idea.
Dang.
They keep up with the pretense that they're sewing. I'm not sure why they felt the need to pull an all-nighter. There's a whole sequence where they're pretending to thread needles and everything and apparently up all night. Working on the looms. I get why they want to pretend to be working. Is it necessary to pretend to be working all night?
Yeah, I don't know.
That struck me as going a bit too far, but even the townspeople are going, they're not going to finish on time. I guess everyone's watching them, or presumably they know where their light is at the palace and they're still up. They must still be working. Anyway, famous scene, we get Alan Arkin announcing that the emperor's clothes are finished and he collapses because he was up all night pretending to sew, I guess.
Yes.
It was a cute pratfall. I get why they did it. It was funny, but logically it didn't really make sense.
No, it really didn't.
So Bo and Morty present their clothes, quote unquote clothes. And explain that the lightness is another excellent quality. It'll feel as if you had nothing on at all. And the emperor insists that they personally dress him because they've been trying to make their escape again. But no. Only the designers should handle the clothes. Well, shoot, there goes that plan. And then we have the wonderful reveal.
Yeah, so he's revealing himself to everyone in the court, right? And this is like the fitting.
Yeah.
And he walks out and he's so into himself. And I love him in his little boxers and his hairy chest.
Red boxers! I love it!
And everyone's shocked, and they're, you know, the ladies are dropping their kerchiefs, and the men are just like,
how do I look? Indescribable.
Everyone's just in shock. It's just crazy.
Kudos to Dick Shawn for being 100% committed to that one.
Oh, yeah.
I love it's the so lady good. With her fan dropping.
Her fan dropping, and oh, it's so good. It's very good.
That's and awesome.
Well, he's ready. He's ready for the fashion show. Now it's time. Now it's time to do this. Here it is. I don't know how he made it past that to the fashion show, but he did.
Well, it's a procession.
A whole yeah. procession.
I don't know if it's mentioned in the original fairy tale, but I can tell you in most of the Danish art, especially those, you know, for sale at Hans Christian Andersen's birthplace and in Copenhagen, in most of the illustrations for The Emperor's New Clothes, at least in Denmark, he's naked. He's not wearing underwear. He's naked.
No, yeah, he's fully naked.
Okay, it is that way in the story.
No, he's fully naked because, well, we're moving. Well, if I move forward a little, I don't want to move a little more forward, but he does the procession. He's in his little red boxers and he's doing his whole procession.
We understand why they gave him red boxers. We do.
Yeah, it's got to be on TV. We got it. And they didn't really blur things out yet. That wasn't a thing yet in the 80s. You couldn't like blur it out. I don't think it really would have worked for this story either. But the little boy says in the tale, in the story, he says,
but look, he has nothing on.
He's right. Listen to the innocent.
The child speaks the truth.
And from the mouth of a babe, that's when they all realize that, I think it's the jig is up. The emperor realizes that, oh, crap.
He's Dick Shawn stops the show and
it's a child. He doesn't have an office.
No. And he says, I'm making a complete ass of myself. I don't remember fairy tale theater cursing. I mean, if you consider ass cursing, it's in the Bible, guys. But
now this is the key difference between the story and the fairy tale theater episode.
Oh,
because in the story, when all the people realize he's been fooled and he is startled by the fact that everyone knows and he realizes that he has been fooled, mm-hmm. he continues the procession and he continues to walk more proudly than ever.
I do not remember that at all.
Whereas in fairy tale theater, he's like, I made an ass of myself, and he runs away.
Which seems a lot more realistic.
But it's a different message because in the story, the emperor learned nothing. He didn't learn anything. He just wanted to continue to hold face in front of his people.
This is amazing to me. I do not remember this at all.
Yeah, he just continues to walk proudly.
Knowing everyone yeah. could see him naked.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm just going to keep walking. We can keep doing this. And that's it. And that's how the story ends. The story ends right there. Although we know the fairy tale theater version does not end just right there.
Wow.
I prefer this ending because I think it has more meaning. I feel like it teaches a better lesson.
Well, I'll posit this to you. Okay, that's where the story ends, but that doesn't necessarily mean he didn't learn anything, right? Yeah. It could be he's owning it and he's like, yeah, even I can get taken. So let's go on with this, boys. Maybe I'm grasping at straws. I'm trying to see it as more positive. Either way, he looks like an idiot.
To me, it seems like he just wants to save face in front of his people, and he wants to just pretend like nothing has happened. That's what I feel like. But
is it saving face to walk naked in front of your entire kingdom?
Yeah.
Debatable question. That's an interesting question.
It's a very interesting ending. And I prefer this ending, the fairy tale theater.
I'm with you on that. Because once our emperor realizes they see the truth, that's not all they see. And he runs away.
That's not all they see.
Our narrator reappears. Timothy Dalton reappears. And I wrote down, where the heck has he been? He's been gone the entire episode. We've had a lot of great narrators throughout all of fairy tale theater. And usually they're with you the whole time. Timothy Dalton was just at the very beginning and at the very ending, which is a little disappointing.
Yeah, it is a little disappointing, but it gets wrapped up pretty quickly after that. Morty has decided to donate the trunk of gold to Maggie.
And distribute to those in need.
Yeah, exactly.
He did the Robin Hood.
Yeah, and he did the good thing. And that moment, now you're remembering the moment he had with Maggie, their conversation, and he did right by her. So that's really nice. And
maybe he wasn't going to talk Bo into it, so he just did it behind his back.
Yeah, he did. He mentioned him. He's like, where's the trunk of gold? And he's like, I left it for Maggie. And, you know, and he's like, yeah, okay, fair. Like, he's not mad about it. He's like,
yeah, we got plenty. We got plenty. Yeah. We're good. Yeah. And then we see the emperor distributing actually his wardrobe to the peasants in the town.
And I love that Timothy Dalton, he narrates and he says that the emperor learned to be a kind ruler. And in the same breath, right after he says that, you see the emperor, like you said, giving out the clothes. The emperor's like, can I just say something? Y'all need to take a bath. And that was so funny. I like died laughing. He tells them that they need to take a bath. He tells the peasants that they're stinky. In the same, right after the narrator said that he learned to be a kind ruler.
You know, that's in keeping with the original story there. Did he really learn his lesson, or is he still kind of a jerk?
And they all just stop and they're like, okay. So funny. It's so good.
And good fortune followed them ever after. And we see a little duck following Bo and Morty, which I love because I'm a big fan of the duck farm idea.
And I loved it because it went full circle back to the beginning. And then you realize that Bo and Morty did retire and they're not going to continue this life of con anymore. And that's like the symbol, the duck following them.
Farmers.
Yeah.
Duck farmers. And they've got enough money to buy several good ducks, and I guess everyone lived happily ever after, and the peasants got a bath.
Yes, and you see the duck. That's your very last shot, which is great. I do love that. And that's it. That was it. That's a wrap.
What were your favorite things and least favorite things of this episode?
Well, like I said, I really liked the cast. I thought the casting was perfect. I think everyone brought their A game to this, and no one was miscast. Everyone fit perfectly.
I 100% agree. And even the little tiny parts, like the army, you and I both became fans of this actor watching him, because he took that small role and he shone in it. I completely agree. What did you dislike about this episode?
Dislikes?
Yeah, that's a loaded question. I know.
A pretty loaded question. I just think I've said this before. I just didn't love it as a fairy tale. I don't consider it a fairy tale. And it's just, that's the source material that has nothing to do with the episode. It's just not
interesting.
It's not interesting. It doesn't have the elements of a fairy tale. It doesn't have magic. It doesn't have a witch. It doesn't have a princess. It doesn't have a romance. It doesn't have any of the things that you're wishing to have in a fairy tale. And I mean, yeah, it has a message, but it's not very interesting. And I don't remember watching it very often. This wasn't one that I would go back and watch over and over and over again and be obsessed with watching and renting out and getting over and over at the library.
Same.
Yeah.
Now, I know you and I talked about this before we started recording. This was never either of our favorite episodes by any stretch of the imagination, but I disliked it for kind of different reasons. It had nothing to do with the fairy tale, but I don't know. Maybe that's my Danish heritage speaking. What I liked about the episode, I agree. I love the casting and they just popped out at me. I love the costumes and sets. They were spot on. I love the art direction in this episode. But what I disliked, I'm not quite sure I can put my finger on it because I do like the fairy tale. I think it just maybe dragged. They had to flesh out a very short story, and it kind of seemed there was a lot of unnecessary stuff. They were trying a little too hard with the gags, with Morty's stomach problems, for example. I could have done without that. Yeah, I kind of feel like this episode could have been done in 20 minutes. I think that's my criticism. But I like the fairy tale as its own, and they did a good job of opening it up. I just feel the story's, I guess, a little thin. You know what they could have done was maybe put like three short, really fairy tales together and done Emperor's New Clothes in 20 minutes and done another one in 20 minutes and another one in 20 minutes and kind of filled the hour that way. I think it's just too short of a fairy tale to what's the word, justify an hour long program, let alone what
kind of movie tells you an hour and a half. Oh God.
Yeah, that was painful. That's another story. We might go into the canon movie tales if this podcast continues, but yes, other film adaptations have made it even more painful to flesh out a very thin story. I guess that's my criticism. And the sets, when you get to the town, I understand why it's shabby and run down. I understand it makes sense to contrast with the opulence of the court, Louis XVI, Louis XV. I get my Louis mixed up. I'm sorry. But I kind of didn't like having to keep cutting back to these drab sets. They're not fun to hang out at. It's like, take me back to the castle, please.
I felt almost like it was like a recycle of the earlier episode we talked about, The Boy Who Left Home, where he's going to the tavern there. Like, I felt like it was a very similar set.
Yeah.
Or maybe a recycle.
The one that this reminded me of was Pied Piper.
Yes, yes, that too.
Just very drab sets for the town that I understand why they did it, but that doesn't make it any more fun to hang out at.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
What would you rate this episode on scale of 1 to 10?
I would say, just because of the casting and the quality of it, like we discussed, the sets were great. The casting was great. I'd like to say I'm going to give it maybe a 6 out of 10.
Mm-hmm. I'm a 6.5. I am right there with you.
Just because I can't see giving it higher than that. I just can't. I don't particularly love it. It's not one that I will ever try to go revisit. And I don't really like the story. But what they did with it, I applaud them. They did a great job with it. R. Carney and Alan Arkin were amazing. Dick Shawn was amazing. I mean, Georgia was amazing.
Spectacular.
And the costumes, I mean, the budget was beyond. Yeah. So
if they used Timothy Dalton more, I would have bumped it up. But he's only at the very beginning and very end. That right there ticked me off, where I'm like, wait, I remember James Bond narrating this episode. Where is he for most of it? Yeah, I'm at a 6.5. It's as beautiful as the art direction was, as gifted as the cast was, it just seemed very thin somehow. I don't really have a better explanation for that. It just didn't quite come together the way I think it should have, or the way other episodes have for me. So you're a 6, I'm a 6.5. We don't hate it, but neither of us is going to ever rewatch this over and over and over again the way we have some other episodes.
Well, you know what time it is, Emily?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
It is time for the land of fairy tales. It is time to read from Emily's website from back in the 90s, as we always do, as per tradition.
Yep. I put together this website when I was a teenager, thank you. And back in the day, I wrote reviews of every single episode, and I have not reread them at all, but Eric found them all, and he loves to torture me with them. So
it's homage. It's an homage to you and your past. You gave it 3 stars.
Out of 4?
Yeah, you do a 4-star scale on, yeah, so Emperor's New Clothes, 3 spinning stars.
Spinning star.
I love the spinning stars. And this is what you had to say. One of Hans Christian Andersen's most famous fairy tales for many reasons, mostly because of its universal truth. Fairy tale theater does this tale justice with a witty script and spirited actors. Dick Shawn is perfectly cast as the materialistic emperor who will fall for anything. Carney and the wonderful Alan Arkin, who really does have 1,000 voices.
Oh, I can explain that. I had probably just seen Wait Until Dark, the movie with Audrey Hepburn, and he did like 5 different voices in that movie. So that's probably where that comment came from.
That's so funny. So yeah, R. Carney and the wonderful Alan Arkin, who really does have 1,000 voices, are a riot as the two tailors. The sets are okay, but not great. So you were probably talking about the tavern, the town scenes. The costumes really are stunning, though. Good thing, considering how much this tale depends on them. This isn't the best fairy tale production, but it is certainly a worthwhile one. Don't miss it.
Well, Okay. That's a lot more generous than I feel tonight. Wow.
Yeah. That... You don't really back up this 3 stars here.
Don't miss it. I said that. I don't back up that one. You can skip this one. This was more of a filler episode, I think.
And your quote that you chose, there will be a ceremony with much pomp and many, many circumstances.
Okay, that was a funny quote. I did like that one.
Yeah, that's cute.
My favorite is still, we might have the smallest army in the land, but by God, it's the best dressed.
That's a good quote. And that's one of your quotes further down. But yeah, that's pretty much what you had to say about this episode.
That was very generous of 16-year-old me.
It really is. It really is.
Yeah, I'm not 16 anymore, and I'm not that generous anymore. I'm sticking with my 6.5 out of 10.
Yeah. So that's pretty much it. That's what you had to say. I agree with some of the things you said, but I don't agree with the 3 stars.
Yeah, I'd probably be down to 2. I don't hate it. I wouldn't go down to 1. I'd be probably at a 2 these days.
Yeah. This brings this episode to a close of Welcome to Tonight's Tale.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Eric. And thank you for joining us for tonight's tale. And hopefully we see you for the next episode, which will be...
The Tale of the Frog Prince, which will be a good one. And thank you, dear listeners. Remember to live happily ever after.
And always look for your happy ending. Thank you and good night.
Good night.